Want to try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
You only eat after you're walking 10,000 steps.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Signos.com. Signos.com with code SPARK. Signos.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back. Or if you're new here, hi, hello, my name's Georgia, and on my platforms here on the internet, I mostly focus on history and unsolved true crime. But today's episode is more of a case study, I guess, than my usual content. We're going to be exploring whether voluntary extreme intoxication leading to automatism absolves somebody of responsibility in violent crimes. So basically, if you're so drunk or so high that you don't know what you're doing and you harm somebody else, are you actually responsible for your actions? The obvious answer here is yes, clearly you are responsible. But there are two cases from Canada that absolutely opened up a can of worms in regards to this, and the verdict became a very divisive issue. The word automatism is defined literally by the Oxford Dictionary as the performance of actions without conscious thought or intention. In legal terms, automatism is the involuntary performance of action without that person making the conscious decision to act. You'll most often see this pop up in legal settings in terms of car accidents, with the defendant arguing that they are not responsible for an accident because they suffered a sudden and total loss of control that was out of their hands, involuntary actions that could not be anticipated. Basically, people argue the accident was no fault of their own, they basically passed out, they checked out, their brain just stopped working, all things like that. I briefly touched on all this in an episode I recorded a few months ago about the Moorgate tube crash. If you want to see maybe a true example of this in action, it's very much been suspected over the years that the driver of the tube maybe had a stroke or something, and so the crash wasn't his responsibility, he died in the crash. I also did an episode on whether you can use sleepwalking as an excuse for crimes, and that also touched on automatism. The essence of automatism as a defence is involuntariness. Somebody doesn't have control over their actions, which can make sense in terms of sudden medical emergencies, whether that's physical or mental. The question is, does it make sense in terms of intoxication? Because you may well be equally unaware of your actions if you are very intoxicated. And courts have long battled with this idea, because where do you draw the line? I'm sure many of us have had those nights where we've got so drunk that we've blacked out and can't remember any of our actions from the night before. I'm not condoning it, it happens, we're all teenagers once. But luckily, most of us aren't going to have committed violent crimes during that time. If you did commit a violent crime, can you argue that you weren't responsible because you don't remember it? You don't remember the motive, it wasn't you. So in legal settings, there are two types of defence that use automatism at their centre. There's mental disorder, in which the involuntariness is caused by a disease of the mind. If this is used successfully in court, this can result in a non-criminally responsible verdict and an assessment of the defendant, which may lead to maybe detention or extensive community service. Then there's the common law automatism defence, in which the involuntariness is not caused by a disease of the mind, but instead caused by something else entirely. Where this defence is successful, the defendant is acquitted of the crime in which they are accused. Basically, if you or your lawyer, I suppose, can successfully argue automatism in court, you can be acquitted of your crime. You were not responsible, you were checked out, it was not you doing these actions. However, according to section 33.1 of the Canadian Criminal Code, this cannot be used as a defence in the case of a violent offence where the state of automatism was self-induced by voluntary intoxication. Basically, if you choose to get drunk or high and you commit this offence, you are still responsible because you chose to ingest or take that substance. Today we're going to be looking at two cases and one from Canada, that of R.V. Sullivan and R.V. Chan, in which the drugs were self-administered, and I'll give you an overview of each. According to an Ontario Court of Appeals report released on June 3rd, 2020, Mr. Thomas Chan was a high school student who voluntarily ingested magic mushrooms in his mother's home, to which he had a severe reaction. Evidence showed that Chan had used magic mushrooms before, and his experiences had always been pleasant and very uneventful. He was a relatively experienced user of mushrooms. But this time around, he went on to experience severe delusions. A few hours after ingesting the mushrooms, he began speaking gibberish, and he ran up to his mother's room where she was sleeping. He accused his mother and his sister of being Satan and the devil before going outside and running to his father's house. His parents were separated, but they lived very close to one another. A friend tried to stop him, but Chan fought him off, with neighbours reportedly hearing him yelling, "I am God." He then broke into his father's house, where he was reported to have not recognised his father when he approached him, and started stabbing him repeatedly. He then also attacked his father's partner, also stabbing her. She would later report a trial that she didn't think Chan recognized her at all.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The father sadly died of his injuries whilst his partner survived, and Chan was tried for manslaughter and aggravated assault. At trial, Mr. Chan claimed that section 33.1 of the Canadian Criminal Code, which prevented him from using a state of self-induced intoxication to negate general intent of the voluntariness required to commit this offence, was not constitutional. Essentially, under the law as it stood, he wasn't allowed to blame the magic mushrooms for his actions, when they were no doubt the reason that he did what he did. He never would have acted that way if he was sober, but he chose to ingest them. In addition to the automatism defence, he also said that an underlying brain injury was also to blame for his actions. However, he was convicted, found guilty by a judge. The other case, R.V. Sullivan, raised the defence of non-mental disorder automatism, and it should be noted that he didn't challenge section 33.1 like Chan. He instead argued that this section didn't apply to him at all, since his intoxication was not voluntary. Sullivan had been prescribed drugs for medical purposes that he attempted to overdose on to end his own life. He didn't take the drugs to be intoxicated. He didn't want to live anymore. The drug in question here was Wellbutrin, the brand name for antidepressant medication bupropion, which his doctors had prescribed him to help him stop smoking. But taking such a large amount caused him to also experience delusions, which led to him believing that his mother was an alien and stabbing her several times. Now, luckily, his mother survived the attack, although she was gravely injured. Sullivan was charged with several offences, including aggravated assault and assault with a weapon. The trial judge in Sullivan's case concluded two things. One, that the cause of Mr. Sullivan's automatism was the ingestion of bupropion, which is an external cause. And two, that he did not pose a continuing danger because of this, concluding that the automatism was not caused by mental disorder, but indeed by intoxication. Therefore, the defence of not criminally responsible due to mental disorder did not apply to him. It was then found that the defence of non-mental disorder automatism also had to be excluded because the intoxication had been voluntary. He had ingested this medication deliberately, even if it was with the intention of ending his own life. Mr. Sullivan was found guilty and was convicted. In court, both of these defences primarily relied on non-mental disorder automatism as their main argument. They hoped that due to the sort of involuntary nature of the men's behaviour, they would not be considered criminally responsible for their crimes. But they were. Following the verdicts, both parties appealed their conviction to the Ontario Court of Appeal and argued that they had been experiencing mental disorder automatism at the time of the attacks, as opposed to the non-mental disorder automatism that they'd originally argued in court. In the appeal, Mr. Chan's defence specifically applied to have Section 33.1 itself declared unconstitutional, arguing that it violated Section 7 and 11D of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Section 7 being the right to life, liberty and security of persons, and 11D being the right to the presumption of innocence. If these two men were found guilty on account of Section 33.1, that would mean, in their view, that anyone could be found guilty of acts without intention to commit them. So, the arguments brought forward by Chan and Sullivan's defences for 33.1 breaching the aforementioned sections of the Charter came under sort of three main categories. Section number one is breach of voluntariness. The section allows people to be convicted and imprisoned for something that they did involuntarily, but fundamental justice requires that voluntariness is an element of every single criminal offence. To remove this sort of like voluntariness from an offence is therefore contrary to justice. And I'm not talking about voluntariness here in terms of you meant to commit the crime going in. I mean, otherwise manslaughter wouldn't really be a thing. A lot of people commit crimes by accident and end up being convicted for them. Like, that is very, very normal. We're talking awareness here. In those sort of cases, you're not incapacitated and unaware of what you're doing. Yes, maybe you make a mistake, but it's not completely out of your control. But when you're unaware of what's going on, it is out of your control, no matter whether you're high or drunk or whatever. Number two is breach of improper substitution. This refers to the fact that 33.1 allows a person to be found guilty of an offence for which the essential elements are not proven. In Canadian criminal law, every single offence requires proof of both the actus reus, which is sort of the physical action or conduct literally translating to guilty act, and the mens rea, which literally translates to guilty mind, and means the intention or knowledge of wrongdoing. Section 33.1 doesn't match up to this because it replaces the burden to prove the actus reus and the mens rea requirements with proof of another action, which is the consumption of intoxicating substances. And very similarly, number three is breach of mens rea. Section 33.1 breaches Section 7 of the Charter because people can be imprisoned for an act even when they do not have the minimum mens rea or the intention of wrongdoing that reflects the nature of crime. When you're intoxicated and you do something sort of violent or criminal, you don't have necessarily intention to do it. You can't prove intention. I hope sort of in between all the legal jargon you're able to keep up with me here. I've tried to keep this as sort of simple and easy to understand as possible, but the law is, as always, very complicated and there's a lot of Latin words for whatever reason. Basically, mens rea is intention of wrongdoing. You've got to prove somebody had intention to do this thing wrong. Or it's sort of like the intention of knowledge. So you have the knowledge that this thing is wrong or illegal and you do it anyway. And that could be as simple as sort of like pulling out into a lane without looking behind you. You know you should look and check your mirrors before you pull out into a lane. If you do that and a car hits you from behind and you cause a death or serious injury, even though you didn't necessarily intend to kill somebody, you still did because you have the knowledge that you should be checking your mirrors before you pull off into the next lane. Does that make sense? There's also something called penal negligence play here, which is basically when somebody's intentional behaviour departs from what a reasonable person would normally do. Section 33.1 does not require a link between the voluntary act of consuming the intoxicating material and the involuntary act of violence. But even if it did require a link, it's not right to say that violent behaviour is an inevitable foreseeable risk of voluntary intoxication. For example, any reasonable person in Mr. Chan's position could not have foreseen that consuming magic mushrooms may have led him to stab and kill his own father. No one would ever assume that that is going to be the outcome of consuming any substance. Yes, you know, it's a risk that you might do things you don't normally do, you might see things you don't normally see, but you don't assume you're going to commit such a violent act, especially if you've consumed this substance before with no bad side effects. As well as this, section 33.1 does not require an accused person to intend to become intoxicated to the point of automatism. To put it quite plainly, if somebody takes a substance only intending to become a little bit inebriated and not enough to allow a huge departure from reasonable behaviour, 33.1 would still enable a conviction. And whilst people all over Canada, all over the world, have had very mixed opinions about the Chan and Sullivan cases, about whether or not they should have been convicted, this did bring forward some quite reasonable questions about the Canadian law as it stood, because it was contradictory. Taking this into account, the Ontario Court of Appeal found that 33.1 had sort of two main objectives in its existence, and so they analysed these. The first was accountability. This part of the law was there to hold assailant who was self-intoxicated to the point of automatism accountable for their actions. Upon review, the court found that on this point, 33.1 intends to hold people accountable despite the mens rea and actus reus of an offence not being proven, which did deliberately undermine charter rights. The second was protection. It was to protect victims from assailants who are self-intoxicated to the point of automatism. And the court found on this point that the intention to protect is valid, of course, but it has no rational connection to the law being imposed. The court emphasised that the law must have a deterrent effect to have any sort of protective power, but they also argued that no one is ever going to be deterred from having a drink or taking drugs on the off chance they might enter into an autonomous state and become so violent that they kill somebody. The only exception off the top of my head is in the case of people who maybe know they get violent when they have a drink. They might be expected to reasonably presume that one day they might have too much, get too violent and kill somebody. But the majority, the vast, vast majority of people, it's not going to be something you take into account. When, for example, I have a gin and lemonade with my dinner in the evening, I never take that first sip with the thought that, oh, maybe if I do this, I'm going to become violent and kill somebody. Like, that's just not a reasonable assumption to make, because that is not the case in 99.99999% of cases. It's like never getting in a car on the off chance that you might be in a crash, or like never leaving the house on the off chance that something falls from the sky and kills you. It's not reasonable to expect that to happen, especially doing something you've done multiple times with no injury. And usually the decision to drink is no defence in court to the violence that comes to happen. People aren't deterred from drinking on the usually very, very minute chance they might act violently, especially if they've never acted violently before. Following all this analysis, the Court of Appeals found that 33.1 was unconstitutional and it was struck down. They concluded that it unfairly held people criminally responsible for actions that they committed while in a state of automatism that they could not have reasonably predicted when they chose to consume the intoxicants. On the back of this, a new trial is ordered for Mr. Chan, and Mr. Sullivan was acquitted of aggravated assault and assault with a weapon. As you can imagine, as I've already said, this was a hugely controversial issue, and I'd be very intrigued to know where you guys stand. Do you think Chan and Sullivan deserve to be found guilty for their actions? Do you think the acquittal was the right call? This is such a deep and nuanced case. I honestly can't really tell you where I personally stand. I feel for Sullivan and Chan, because imagine coming back to consciousness and discovering you've done something as violent as this, especially if you've got no history of violent behaviour. I mean, you would feel some sort of injustice for being found guilty, wouldn't you? It wouldn't feel fair. But that doesn't change the fact that you did do it. You chose to ingest the drugs that made you act this way. Magic mushrooms are illegal in Canada unless you have an exemption from Health Canada, which, as far as I'm aware, Chan absolutely did not have, and is actually quite a rare thing. He was taking them recreationally. Now, people generally ingest magic mushrooms with the intention of having some sort of out-of-body experience, and there's no way of knowing what that's going to be from time to time. At its very base level, the reason that most people take mushrooms is to experience hallucinogenic effects. It is well known that hallucinations and tripping are a very common side effect. So I do personally see the arguments in Chan's case that he should still have been found guilty, but that's just me, you might have a different opinion. But in my mind, things are much more complicated in Sullivan's case. He took the Wellbutrin with the intention of ending his own life. He didn't intend to see tomorrow, let alone be argued to have any intention to stab and kill someone. The Mayo Clinic lists some rare side effects of this drug as false beliefs that cannot be changed by facts, having extreme distrust of people, and seeing, hearing, or feeling things that are not there. So someone potentially hallucinating could fit within those, but once again, you can't expect somebody not to take a drug prescribed for their health on the off chance that one of these side effects might happen. They're very, 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 very rare. And even if this does happen, you don't expect to believe that your mother is an alien and attack her. That's not a logical conclusion to jump to. Now, you could argue in Sullivan's case it was the overdose that did it, but even then, Mayo Clinic only says symptoms of overdose are lightheadedness, dizziness or fainting, loss of consciousness, slow or irregular heartbeat, and unusual tiredness. Nothing there about hallucinations. When you compare the potential known side effects of taking magic mushrooms versus taking an overdose of a prescribed drug, it's clear that you'd expect this kind of hallucination from one more than the other. In the wake of this decision by the Ontario Court of Appeals, the defence of non-mental disorder automatism is now open to be used by defendants accused of violent crimes committed whilst in an automatic state as a result of self-induced intoxication. So basically now, if you're drunk, if you're high, you can claim this defence. Of course, this was sort of just in that province in Ontario, but the decision did later go on up to the Supreme Court of Canada, which again did agree that Section 33.1 did indeed violate the constitutional rights of accused people, and they struck it down not just in Ontario, but across the whole of Canada. As I've said many times, there were lots of concerns about this, but particularly among women's rights groups. LEAF, which is the Women's Legal Education and Action Fund, worried that this ruling would enable perpetrators of sexual assault and violent domestic crimes to evade responsibility for these crimes via this defence. They and other women's rights groups called upon politicians to consider that violence does disproportionately affect women and children, and that the assessment of Section 33.1 would need to consider and balance all their rights as well as the rights of the defendants. Basically, they needed to ensure the rights of women and children alongside this. In response, the Supreme Court made it very abundantly clear that drunkenness alone is not a defence in a sexual assault case. The cases where this defence would be considered sort of legitimate go beyond just your standard drunkenness. There needs to be evidence of something more. The Supreme Court agreed with LEAF that the rights of protection for women and children are intensely important and they must be given full consideration under any charter analysis. But you can see the concern, right? Like, women disproportionately deal with gender-based violence, particularly when alcohol is involved. If men could now use being drunk as an excuse for hitting their wives, how many are going to get away with their crimes if they just say they blacked out and can't remember? This is a very sensitive topic, and one which has to be handled by care on a case-by-case basis, no matter the gender of the perpetrator and or victim.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Insulin sensitivity.
Always
Stop it.
They don't know your body, only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
The changes made must protect everyone, the victims and the legal rights of the accused persons too. Just because somebody is arrested and is going to trial for a crime, it doesn't mean they did it. Is innocent until proven guilty, and they've got to be treated as such. So on June 23rd, 2022, amendments to the criminal code relating to all of this came into force, just a month after the Supreme Court made the decision on the R.V. Sullivan and Chan case about 33.1 being unconstitutional. And these amendments closed the gaps in the law left by all of this, ensuring that individuals who voluntarily consume intoxicants in a criminally negligent manner, who become extremely intoxicated and harm others, are held criminally responsible. The use of the word negligent here is important. This means this person has not taken enough care to avoid a reasonably foreseeable risk of a violent loss of control. If you are already a violent person, if there's a history of violence and you drink to the point of automatism or drink to the point where you can claim automatism, you are still responsible. The accused person who's trying to use the extreme intoxication or automatism defence has to prove that they were at this level of intoxication. The burden of proof is on you, and that requires expert evidence at trial. And as you can imagine, it's extremely hard to prove something like this. The Supreme Court has made it abundantly clear that drunkenness is not a defence for committing criminal acts, including assault and sexual assault. The vast majority of cases where somebody commits a criminal offence whilst intoxicated are never going to come under the umbrella of automatism. This is saved for cases like Chan's, like Sullivan's, where there really is a case to argue. The ruling applies only in the rare instance where a person chooses to ingest substances that cause intoxication so extreme as to result in a state of automatism. Automatism does not equal blackout drunk. It has been made clear, like I said, that alcohol alone will almost never result in a state of extreme intoxication akin to automatism. We're talking about something entirely, like taking magic mushrooms and stabbing your father, like taking an overdose of Wellbutrin, a drug prescribed to you, and attacking your mother. That is not a reasonably foreseeable action. I'm really intrigued to see all of your guys' opinions on this case. Like, do you think that Chan and Sullivan should have kept their original sentences? Do you think that they were responsible, even if they were claiming automatism? Should they have known that taking the substances they did would have led to these actions? I think it's going to be a really interesting comment section. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you know of anything similar to this that you might like to see me cover in the future, then please do let me know, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye, guys.